the show.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I am your host, Lisa Anderson. Hey, I want to let you know you have heard about Focus on the Family's Date Night Challenge here at the Boundless Show before, and now we have the Date Night Challenge DVD available. Those of you that remember Michael Jr. being on our show, he is part of the Date Night Challenge, and so he is on that DVD. But it's a great opportunity for you to tell folks in your church about it, maybe host a church event, or just watch it for yourself. If you want more information, check it out at focusonthefamily.com/date night. All right, well, here we are this week's show, another great one with a little new angle on relationships for you. Later on in the show, our inbox, we will have one of our folks answering a question from a 27-year-old guy who could potentially start dating a girl that just turned 18. So he says he knows that she's legal, but what about his friends and family? They say they are not going to have any problems with it, but will they? What should he do? And then later on, our culture segment, we have Paul and Virginia Friesen in the studio, and they are kind of experts and authors related to a parent's involvement in their kid's choice of spouses as that eventually happens. Authors of Letters to My Daughters and Before You Save the Date. So that'll be fun to talk to them. So in light of that, we had to assemble a panel of parents of young adults who, you know, I mean, there are parents out there that we know that either are, you know, anticipating their kids getting married someday and or are fearful about it, or maybe not. Maybe they're confident. Maybe they just want them to get married. They're like, please get out of my house. So who knows? But then we have those that have already walked that path. So this is going to be a fun discussion. So in light of that, I want to introduce the panel, all of who've been on the show before. Dean Ridings, hey.
Welcome. Hello. Hi.
Great to have you, Dean. And then Roger and Diane Angolia. Yay. Love having you guys. We bring you in here to talk about marriage. You know, they are married.
That is so true. 35 years.
Yeah, that's good. So, okay, now I also want to know, just tell us about your kids, because we're going to be talking about really a parent's involvement in their kids' lives leading up to marriage, including the selection of a spouse and walking through that dating and engagement process and any kind of fears or input or, you know, control you wanted to have, all of that, the good and the bad. So, Dean, who's in your stable?
Well, first of all, I am married to Kim. We've been married for 34 years, mm-hmm. and so pretty excited about that. And we have four children. We have Beth, who is 24, Becca, Sarah, and our youngest is Christopher, and he's 17.
All right. So you are right in the thick of it. So
yeah, fun right. times.
Okay. And the status on all of them, all single?
No, actually, Beth got married August the 18th, just recently. I had the opportunity to co-officiate the wedding with the father of the groom, so it was a great time.
Very good. Wonderful. All right, and Roger and Diane, what mm-hmm. about you?
Well, we have two kids. Our son is 34, and he's been married for 6 years, and we have a daughter that's 33, and she's been married for 5 years.
Okay. So you had to walk that path twice.
Yes, within a year.
Okay.
And
wow.
Now we're walking the grandparent
right.
path
mm-hmm.
with
yes.
three and a fourth one on the way.
Okay. So tell me kind of as we start this discussion, because I think a lot of times, you know, in this discussion, the parents are a little bit ignored, especially when we talk about dating nowadays. It's really done as a solo activity by many young right. adults, and they just feel, oh, I'm just on my own and I take my cues from the culture, or hopefully I'll get some input from my friends or whatever. But you guys probably, I want to look back as to when you had your kids and you held them as little babies in your arms. Did you kind of assume that, oh, I'll just cross these bridges when I come? Or did you have a moment in any of their growing up years where you're like, I'm going to have to transition them not only into adulthood, but eventually out of my home and to leave and cleave and form a family with another person? What were your feelings around that?
Well, I know for me, it was recognizing that once your child walks, the first couple steps are towards you. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as they realize they can do this on their own, they turn around and run mm-hmm. from you. Mm-hmm. But they can't go far because they're still little. Mm-hmm. So that's your first recognition that this is going to be the rest of their lives. Then they get on a tricycle. and it's a little further and a little faster. Mm-hmm. Then it's a bicycle, and the next thing you know, they're in a car and they're driving away. So those stages I knew were coming, and how was I going to handle those each step of the way? So even from the beginning, holding them, mm-hmm. I knew they really weren't mine. They belonged to the Lord, even though I wanted to hang on. Mm-hmm. But I knew they don't belong to me. Mm-hmm. So how am I going to let them go through each of those stages so that when it comes to the end, my hands aren't clenched and mm-hmm. they have to rip their bodies from my, you know, arms, but that my hands are open and mm-hmm. that they can walk away and we can still have a great relationship.
And as for me, I don't think it was on my radar screen back when I was holding Beth for the first time and then the other kids, except for the fact that I connected with some men who were older than me. I did that intentionally because I wanted to see how they were parenting their kids and to take some cues from them. And so, yeah, it was on my radar screen, and I kind of flew a banner, if you will, early on to let the kids know, let the girls especially know. Dad, you know, isn't going to be one of those fathers who, you know, has the shotgun. You've heard about that, you know, and you knock on the door. It's like, oh, no, got to meet the dad. But I wanted to meet the kids. And actually, Kim and I intentionally opened up our home so that it was an inviting place for the kids and the kids' friends. So we actually got to know the kids beforehand. But what I said with the especially with my daughters, I really want to meet these guys who are interested in dating you. And if you'll do me the favor and show me the respect, I really would like to have them talk to me about doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in our household, it was really interesting because one of our children is a boy, the other one's a girl. And I think, like Diane said, from that very beginning stages, we recognize that these kids were going to be on the run, and someday they will be moving away from us in terms of out of our household. So we were intentional in developing relationship with them as parent, but then we became very intentional in developing relationship with them as friend. Mm-hmm. So when they got to that time where they would leave our home, we had developed a relationship to where they felt free in coming back. They could seek our advice, our input when necessary or wanted. Mm-hmm. So my mentor, when our first child was born, my mentor said to me, your job is to teach and train. God's job is the outcome. Mm-hmm. So we took the opportunity to make sure that we did our part. We taught, we trained with the best of our ability based on what we had at the time and recognized that God would take care of the rest. Mm-hmm. So when it came time for them to transition, move into marriage, It was wonderful to be able to let them go because we loved both of our children's choices for spouses, and so it worked out great for us.
Yeah. Now that brings up a good point. Did any of you, you know, whether it's their current spouses, you know, and you just had to get used to them or whatever, or just in their dating years, did any of them bring home anyone that you considered unsuitable or even someone that was interested in them, you know, that you're like, yeah, this needs to not go anywhere because this is not okay?
You know, absolutely. And especially for your daughter, it's like mm-hmm. you're really watching these guys as they come in. The thing about Raj is that he did have the shotgun at the front door. So
that still
was,
do.
Yeah, that was a completely different thing.
Dean would just write an article about
yeah,
that.
That's right.
Dean writes for us here
yeah,
at Focus.
So I've heard stories about it, but now I've met someone.
Yeah. Met someone. Yeah. And the thing is that our daughter loved that because she knew that she could rest on you. You can't do this. I'm going to tell my dad. Mm-hmm. And so there was this responsibility that was put on Roger's shoulders for the behavior of these boys because she's like, do you tell your dad everything? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that you're drawing this line of respect. But there were a couple guys and one in particular, and she would ask us, what do you think? What do you see? Can you keep me informed as to this relationship as it's growing? So I'm thankful that we had talking relationships long before then, even while they were dating. What makes you attracted to this person? Mm-hmm. What is it about them that you like? What is it about them that you don't like? And let's evaluate clearly. You're spending time with this person. Is this person building you up or is this person tearing you down? So we started those conversations with kindergarten. Mm-hmm. so that they could pick right friends way back then. Mm-hmm. So that when you get to that point where they're going to start looking for a date or a potential spouse, those questions have already been in their minds mm-hmm. in order to look for that right person.
Well, much like Dean, we loved having our kids in our home, and they brought their friends to our home. And so we always had that input, who they were hanging around with, what these people were like. And we could, in light of what Diane was just saying, we could interface with our children and let them know the things that we saw that perhaps maybe they didn't see. And so that opened their eyes along the way, too, because they would begin to evaluate their potential spouses or even their dates based on the criteria that had been established by us early on in their relationship with us. Mm-hmm. So it worked out great.
Now, what were some of the things that you would say, you know, patterns or just different ways of doing things in the way that your kids dated versus how you guys met and dated? And did you try to project any of that on your kids? And how did that go over well or not?
Well, I had very uninvolved parents. Okay. So for me, it was like a hit and miss. And I didn't have a great dad that was a leader. He was working. He was always gone. And then I had a mom that got into the work field. And so she was always gone. So my choices were pretty much based on my own. The good news was I had an early relationship with Christ in high school through campus life. So there were men now that I had never seen. Is this what this looks like? So that I could, actually talk with them and begin to evaluate. I did have a moral base that I worked from, but how do you evaluate as a high school kid that is this person a quality person? Is this mm-hmm. person going to be someone? So I think that I saw that in my own life, and I thought, I don't want to be that mom that I saw. I want to be a mom that loves her kid but has built enough relationship beforehand so that they were the ones that could initiate. What do you think? So we didn't just like burst into their lives and go, he's an idiot, dump the sucker. But it was, what do you think? Mm-hmm. What do you think? What do you see? And I know Roger's favorite line was, the jury's still out. Mm-hmm. You know, the jury's still out. Mm-hmm. And especially on one young man that she kept saying, I'm going to marry him. What do you think, Dad? The jury's still out mm-hmm. on this one. So that let her know, keep probing, keep looking, mm-hmm. keep seeing. And it ended up that she saw mm-hmm. what we were seeing, and therefore she broke up with that guy.
Mm-hmm. I accepted Christ as a teenager, and God was so gracious to do that, preventing me from going off on a very bad road. I came from a broken family affected by divorce and alcohol, and so the adults in my life were not good role models to me, and I was starting to think about that being the pattern for my life. I accepted Christ at 15, and I got involved in a church, a youth group, and my present wife, Kim, my only wife, she became a good friend of mine. And we were friends from age 15 to, it wasn't until I returned from basic training in the military at age 19 that Kim and I started looking at each other differently. And so we always look back on that time and say, what a blessing it was to develop that good, solid foundation of friendship before we started looking at each other differently. And we always instilled that in our kids. And we said, you know, who's your friend? Develop the friendship. You know, be friends with God. Go deep with God. And develop good, God-honoring friendships with other people. Solid friendships. And that's been a value that, we've had since the beginning. And so I mentioned that my daughter, Beth, she married her best friend, and how cool is that?
That's cool. Would you guys say, looking back on this, I mean, obviously it looks like you had some pretty good structures in place and wanted to do it well. Anything that, you know, if you had to do it over again, and Dean, you probably will, that you would do differently? Anything where you realized, okay, maybe here's where I stepped a little out of bounds, or here's maybe where I was a little bit crazy or pulled out too many guns, Roger, or, you know, or anything where, you know, you wish you would have done something a little differently.
You know, and I think for me, I'm not sure that I would have done much different, only because Diane and I, you know, had been doing marriage and premarriage counseling for 30 plus years now. Our kids saw that happening in our household. They saw us meet with couples over and over again. And I thought it was amazing how God used, you know, if we're to teach and train, while we were counseling other couples, our children were being trained. And sometimes after a couple would leave, our kids would walk into the living room and say, ah, give them 6 months and it'll be over. They became very aware of the positives and the negatives that they saw in other people's lives. They heard from us the things that we believed in and what our lives were established on. So I don't think that there's so much that I would necessarily change, especially because when it came to predominantly our daughter, that if she wanted to marry this guy, he had to spend time with me one-on-one, more in a discipleship environment. So it really gave me a feel for who this individual was, where their heart was before the Lord, and all that that would suggest as it related to their heart before my own daughter. Hmm. And so we use those things to our advantage. And so in my case, I don't know that I would have changed much. Maybe Diane would have. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
No, but I do want to say on that note that he just said, the first little fella that she brought home, Roger offered, can I meet with you? Can I mentor with you? And he made the comment to our daughter, well, you know, I don't really like your dad. Well, that was the end of that, because these two are just phenomenally close. Now, here comes this other fella, Jason, into her life. And so Roger's like, okay, I want to mentor. Do you want to meet with me? And it got to the point where Jason said to Serafina, if we break up, can I still have your dad? And she's like, yes, you can have my dad. So that right there shows that teachable heart. And that's what we wanted to say to the kids. They need to have a viable relationship with Christ. And it needs to be shown in both words and actions. Are they going to, do they stand on the moral principles? Do they hold true to those? And are they teachable? Mm-hmm. Can you call somebody out on their behavior? And do they repent quickly and truly change? Not just, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, and then do it again. Mm-hmm. So they are looking for those very things in their lives. Mm. I know with our son, he had a girlfriend through high school. They broke up. She went off to college. He went this way. And all those rest of those next 5 years, he kept bringing home girls. Then he was like, well, what do you think of this? And I'm like, you are looking for Jackie. Every person you've brought home is Jackie, but not her. Mm-hmm. And so she did end up coming back into his life again, and they did marry. Hmm. So it was like you could tell. And he's like, yeah, you're right. I am. I'm looking for her. Hmm. And it's like, well, then go find her because this is ridiculous what you are doing. So I was glad he could hear that, listen to that, and then pursued and married her.
You know, it may sound like we had it all figured out, like, you know, and almost like we're perfect and it was easy. It's not. It's a day by day, moment by moment challenge for us as parents, you know, and to live out our walk with God, and not just talk it, like you were saying, just live out the walk and talk with God. And for me, the challenge was the balance, the extent to which I should come close or stay away. Sometimes, you know, I look to my wife, especially with my daughters, to take the lead. And I'd say, Kim, do you want to handle this one? Do you want to kind of track with Beth or Becca, Sarah on this one? Or do you want me, just help me out here? So the partnership of our marriage was really important. And hearing from Kim, it's like, stand back, you know, let me talk with her. And so, you know, it's that balance of honoring my wife, honoring before the Lord, saying, we just want to do everything in such a way that you're pleased and honored with this family. And he sure is blessed because of that. And made it look easy, though it wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. Know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And sure. I think it's knowing well the condition of your flock. It's like you have to know each of the individual personalities of your kids well enough to know what is it really that this child needs? And do they know in themselves what it is that they need? Well, he's so cute. Well, I don't care. Give him 10 years. You know, it's like I say to Serafina, marry a nerd. The athletes fall apart by the time they're 40. And she married a nerd. But it's great. So it's like the kids have to know themselves. And that means you have to know yourself enough to be able to know them as well. And you're right, it is a partnership, because we brought in two sometimes different angles on the same thing because it's a male and female perspective.
So as we wrap up here, I just want each of you to then to answer this question, and that is, if you had the chance to sit down with each and every one of the young adults in our audience, what would you tell them they need to expect of their parents? And some of them are going to have to go outside of their family. Some of them don't have parents. Some of them don't have involved parents. Some, you know, never had a parent in their life. Mm-hmm. But either that parent or that mentor or friend or counselor at church or whomever, what should they expect as they move not only out of the house, but into a relationship, into marriage? What should they ask for? And then what should they be willing to receive? And what do they need to humble themselves in?
You know, I think of what the Bible says, Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12, and, you know, about two being better than one, and, you know, a cord of three strands is not easily broken. I've heard someone say that means always have somebody you're speaking into that person's life, but always have a mentor. And I'd encourage, you know, each person here, have a mentor, find a mentor, a God-honoring person that you could respect. Look to that person and say, you know, speak anything to me. I mean, honestly, just speak honestly anything. I'm looking to you for help.
I think it's important that you listen, because you can have somebody that's got great wisdom, but if you're not willing to look at the hard stuff and examine yourself in what is this a want? Is this a desire? Is this truly what God would have? So again, being teachable. So you have these great people who are willing to be honest and say the tough things, but are you willing to hear the tough things and make the changes? But he loves me. No, he doesn't. Does he really? Would he behave like this? So it's you know, finding the right people and then keeping yourself open.
I prayed for 5 years for a mentor, and I didn't want somebody my own age. Not that God couldn't use somebody my own age, but I wanted somebody who had been older, wiser, had been there, had experienced it. And the Lord gave me that. I waited, and he gave me that. And because I asked, then I knew I had the responsibility to listen. Here's a man full of wisdom, he's a godly man, and he's going to speak into my life. I have to be willing to take that seriously. And I would also say to your audience, you know, when you're developing a relationship, you got to give it time. Yeah, we get in love with love. And unfortunately, it's only time that really begins to reveal the true heart or the true nature of an individual. So it's one of your greatest allies. Take the time. And then thirdly, I would say to your young audience, you seek the Lord. By seeking the Lord, what will God do? He will provide for you what you need when you need it. He knows the heart of our desire. He knows the kind of man or woman that you might be looking for. And so let the Lord guide and direct you. If you go out looking for yourself, say, I've got to find somebody. I'm getting on in the age and then the time's ticking. It's irrelevant, because God will give us what he wants us to have when he wants us to have it, but for his purpose and good pleasure. We reap some of the benefit of that. But when we allow God to work in and through our lives, the bottom line is he's all honored, he's glorified, and we get the blessing. So best thing we can do is, you know, the old saying, we know it from Scripture, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding, what? In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your path, even in this area.
Good wisdom in that, you guys. Thanks so much for being part of this conversation and for weighing in on this and sharing that perspective from, you know, from a parent's point of view. So folks, go out there. Like I said, get your parents involved. Show them that you love them, or a trusted mentor or friend, someone that can really speak into this, someone who's walked this road ahead of you. So thanks so much, you guys.
Thank you.
You are holding me together with hands that hold forever. God, you are strong. And when my
Well, hey, everyone. Continuing on with the show, we are here with our culture segment, and I'm very privileged to have Paul and Virginia Friesen with me. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Very good to have you. Well, you guys are, you came from the East Coast. We love that when we can feature folks from across the U.S. and elsewhere, other countries even. We're going to talk today, continuing this discussion, those of you who have been listening, we just had a panel of parents of young adults on talking about kind of some of their fears and concerns and joys as they help their young adults transition out of their homes and ultimately into marriage, and how they had a say really in who their kids dated and what that looked like, and maybe some things they wish they'd done differently. And you, Paul, have actually written, you guys have three daughters, mm-hmm. and one is now married, right?
Two are now married.
One is single. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, so you guys are just cranking along. You're good. You're putting stuff into practice. That's good. One's still single, and have written books, including Before You Save the Date, Letters to My Daughters, and So You Want to Marry My Daughter. So I don't know about any potential guys. I mean, they say that you've written a book called So You Want to Marry My Daughter, and I mean, and that's kind of concerning. Did a lot of guys step up, or were your daughters mad at you? Like, oh, great, now we don't have a good pool because none of these guys. That's scary. That's a lot of fun. But I want to kind of glean from you guys, because you really, I think, have been examples in what I saw through what you wrote about what it means to be intentional in this process, mm-hmm. and to speak into the lives of your kids as they move towards marriage. So the first thing I really want to throw out there, and this will be great to get both of your perspective as mom and dad, but why would you say, you know, we've got a lot of folks in our audience who some have really involved parents, some have believing parents, some have non-believing parents, some have absent parents, or mm-hmm. their parents haven't even been in their lives. But maybe some of our adults, you know, in their 20s, and we have some in their 30s who are like, oh, no, I'm an adult. I don't need someone speaking into this decision. I certainly know whom I want to marry, and I know what to look for, and I know this and that. So what would you say, like, why should parents have a say in the future mm-hmm. of their kids?
Well, I think it's the second most important decision that somebody's ever going to make. Mm-hmm. And if we're buying something, a car, for instance, we get advice from people who have expertise in that area. And so when we're going to make such a huge decision, I think we want to surround ourselves with people who really, truly know us, love God, want the best for us, and are going to be able to be objective as they speak into our lives. Hmm. And that can include parents or people in our church that know us well. And I think we just have to expose ourselves to those sorts of voices.
Mm-hmm. I think especially for those who have been raised in intact families where their parents have been really involved in their lives, I think that seeking their parents' advice, even if they're already, you know, in their mid-20s or mid-30s about the marriage decision, is really warranted, in part because your parent really has a different perspective and vantage than you have. And if you've had a close relationship with them, they probably know you better than most anybody else will know you. I know we have a 30-year-old daughter. She just turned 30 last week. She's single. She's a very wise girl. She's living her life for Christ. And she's would love to be married, but she's very, very committed to waiting for God's best for her. And we're just really honored that anytime some young man comes on the screen, even in the most casual dating situation, she loves to run it past us. Hmm. And I don't feel it's because she needs us to direct her moves or because we are going to tell her what to do, but she really does like to bounce it off of us because of our knowledge for her and our deep love for her. Yeah. We want the best.
That's good.
And that's a process that's taken some time. Mm-hmm. We got involved in a relationship earlier in her life in which I just thought, let's save her time. This guy is a loser. And if we just help her understand that mm-hmm. right away, it'll solve a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the most difficult times in our relationship with Lisa because mm-hmm. she just felt that we didn't trust her. And in the midst of that, she said, Mom and Dad, you trust me in everything. You say I'm wise. Why are you interfering in this relationship? Mm-hmm. And it was really a teaching time for us. And we, you know, now are really speaking into her life at her request mm-hmm. and still making observations, but certainly not making the dogmatic statements that we did in that relationship.
Yeah. Well, as you know, I too am Lisa and probably could have benefited from you stepping into my life a couple times in the past. But okay, I just met you today. So that said, I want to know, you know, knowing that you have three daughters, what is the unique perspective that each of you brought as you were able to evaluate potential guys who would come in and out of your daughters' lives? Like, what were you concerned about, Paul, and what did you feel you brought to the table? And then what, you know, did you, Virginia, being a woman who had walked through a courtship process yourself, mm-hmm. what did you bring to the table?
I think the thing I brought to the table was I'm a man. Mm-hmm. And most women have no clue how a man thinks. Mm-hmm. And so
even if they think they do.
Even if they think they do. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, in the area of modesty, when they would start to go out the door in something I felt was immodest, I would say, could I just tell you what a man's going to think when they're looking at you in that? And I would be very specific. Mm-hmm. One of our daughters said, I found that disturbing and disgusting. And so I went and changed. But I think that's important. What I wanted for our daughters more than anything else is that they personally had such a relationship with the Lord that they wanted to be married to a man who loved God's word, who loved the Lord, loved his church, and was a servant who was going to take care of my daughters. Mm. And those were the main things. And we're so thankful for two son-in-laws who love God's word. It directs their life. They're so far ahead of where I was at their age. And they have a passion for serving Christ. And when those two things are there, the rest of it, where they work, what they do, you know, where they live, all those sorts of things really are secondary at best.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that Paul brought so much more to the table in one sense than I did in terms of them understanding who to eventually select as a husband, because he modeled for them the kind of man that he would hope they would one day marry. Not in any way professionally, or he didn't have to have the same interests as Paul or anything, but from a character standpoint, Paul modeled Christ-likeness for the girls, so they knew that they didn't want to settle for a guy that wasn't all in for Christ. Mm-hmm. So I think that was huge. And he also talked, it was interesting, we had a conversation with two of the three very recently about the subject, and both of the girls said, we learned so much about how a husband should really love a wife by watching how you treated mom. Hmm. And that also just set a bar for us. I would say from my standpoint, the biggest thing that I really wanted them to understand as women who'd embraced Christ and embraced his word, that God's call to them would be to have a submissive and respectful heart towards their husband. And I said to them in their teens, I said, do you realize that God is helping you now understand what he's going to be calling you to? So you have to choose really, really carefully. And I don't know how much sense that made to them back when they were in their teens, but I will tell you, by the time they were in their 20s, each of them had really not a lot of relationships, but enough to know that they'd get to a point and realize that they were all of a sudden leading the relationship. Mm-hmm. We had three pretty strong girls. They have two strong parents, but we believe really strongly in the leadership of the husband and the family, and not obviously in a dictatorial manner, but in a loving Christ-like way. And what they knew was that they didn't want to be in charge of the show. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I really helped them sort of sort that out. What does that look like mm-hmm. in marriage? What does that look like in a relationship? What does it look like as you're getting to know who a guy is? Is he just quiet and passive, or is he quiet and a leader? And either one could be true. Mm-hmm. So I kind of helped him understand that dimension.
Okay. Well, it's obvious. I mean, I think there are a lot of parents out there, you know, parents of young adults who say, you know, yeah, I want my kids to marry well. I want to be involved in their lives. But, you know, not many are as intentional as you two, and certainly not many actually write books about it. So I want to know, from what you've experienced, both with your own daughters and just what you've seen, what are maybe a few things that young adults are pretty clueless about going into marriage that really parents can actually give them some solid wisdom on if they mm-hmm. take the time to do it? Mm.
Well, I think one of the areas that we can help our children in this area is that help them understand that convictions and character outlast compatibility and and chemistry. Mm-hmm. Most single adults make their decisions on relationship first based on chemistry, then compatibility, but often don't really look at the character or the convictions that this person has. So I think a parent hopefully can speak truth into that. And we're very well aware in our own lives and our lives of our children and others that chemistry is huge. And so we're fighting against that, but we want them to understand that chemistry doesn't last unless there is conviction and character. We think chemistry can increase in a marriage when there's this bond, but if all that's drawing you together is chemistry, you're not going to make it. The Bachelor and Bachelorette show don't have great records of success, even though they're passionate in their kissing.
Yeah. Well, they would have better records if they could, like, stay in Tahiti the entire time for their entire relationship. Right. Unfortunately, they need to go back to Iowa and wherever they come from.
With that wardrobe provided for them.
Exactly. So, okay, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, I think another thing is I think we underestimate how important our modeling as a married couple is to our kids. Realize that is their primary source for them understanding what marriage is. And sadly, in all too many homes, even Christian homes, the marriage is dysfunctioning on a level that many kids raised in those situations give up on the idea of marriage. They don't have any hope that it could actually work because they really haven't seen it work. Even if the parents stay together and don't divorce, which we know 50% will, but they just kind of leave that situation with a bad taste in their mouth and feel like, well, marriage is bad somehow. As a result, I think this generation of 20-somethings and 30-somethings have, one, given up the hope that marriage can be good, and two, don't have any real understanding that marriage is for keeps. Mm-hmm. That there's a permanence in the covenant by design that's really best for us. And rather than see that as God's design, we see marriage as a revolving door, as a very disposable part of our life. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I think shoot low. I think that we then don't realize when we roll the dice on marriage, it's like, well, if this doesn't work out, I can always try again.
Mm-hmm. I think you've alluded to one of the real practical problems is if you don't have a model in your own marriage or your own parents, what do you do? Right. And increasingly, churches even are making this more difficult because they're segregating singles into their own church service. And we don't have this intergenerational deal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think if our parents do not have a marriage that we want to emulate, we need to adopt another set of parents, spiritually speaking, that we hang out with. And I would encourage people, find some of your church that they seem to really be passionate about the Lord and each other, and tell them you want to take them to lunch and just hang out with them for a while. Mm-hmm. And usually they'll start paying after the first one and you're good to go. You got mentors, but don't ever ask them to be your mentor. Mm-hmm. That'll freak them out.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you two ever have with your two daughters that are now married or with Lisa for that matter, as maybe guys came through the door, did you ever look and just see some and you're like, yeah, no, I'm not okay with him? Or did you disagree among yourselves about, I want to find out this about him. Oh, no, I think he's great, whatever. How did you resolve anything like that?
I think Virginia has been quicker to be positive about young men than I have.
Uh-huh.
Virginia hits it off with people so well. And so she just would form a friendship with them quickly. I think I was a little more skeptical and maybe a little more objective in what's this guy like. And I don't think we were ever really far off on our assessment of young men, but I would have probably been more critical at an earlier stage and just said, let's cut the loss here and end this thing.
Yeah. Well, so how do you, for example, if you had one that you were kind of had some questions about, then what do you do? What do you say to him? How do you approach that situation to ferret these guys out?
Well, I would really talk to our girls. And I think one of the mistakes that we made early and learned from, what I would just come out and say, this guy's a loser. You know, I remember saying to one of our daughters, all of your boyfriend's name have begun with J, and they've all been jerks, you know. And so I think I learned about speaking about positive things. Like, wow, it's really neat that he plays the guitar so well and loves Christian music. I love that about him. Have you guys ever talked about how he might support you? You know, so instead of the first thing.
With his guitar, of course, the street corner.
One of my phrases was, I love that he plays the guitar and loves Jesus, but does he have a job?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I took away is, don't hop in with the negative. There are positive things, but try to elicit a conversation. Or even if you're positive on them, your daughter may say in that situation, yeah, but he doesn't have a job. And then you can say, well, that could be a concern. Mm-hmm. And then you're dialoguing. Mm-hmm. I think too often we lecture. Mm-hmm. And at least we have not found lecturing helpful with our daughters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to also say, I've been surprised at the number of parents we know whose children are in this age category who aren't involved at all in the process, mm-hmm. or who will say to me, well, I have serious questions about X, X, and X, or X, Y, and Z. And I'll say, well, have you talked to your daughter or son about it? Oh, no. I mean, yeah, I don't want to really be intrusive. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a balance. Mm-hmm. I certainly don't think you should be intrusive, but being open and asking questions, I just think I would be inconsolable if I really felt there was a serious issue that I just kept quiet about, mm-hmm. because I didn't want to stir the waters or whatever.
Yeah. Well, very practically, I know a number of families where the mom, say, for instance, say, well, my daughter just got engaged. And I say, well, tell me about the young man. Oh, he's funny. He's got a good job. Comes from a good home. You know, goes on. But I've missed something. And I'll say, well, is he a tell me about his spiritual life. Mm-hmm. Well, he's not a believer, but he'll come to church. Mm-hmm. But I'm just so happy for my daughter.
Because she seems so happy.
She's happy, so I'm happy. Mm-hmm. And I try to say it gently, but you shouldn't be happy. You should be distraught that your daughter, who is calls herself a believer, mm-hmm. is about to marry somebody who doesn't share faith. That's mm-hmm. in direct contradiction to God's word. So I think a lot of parents, frankly, aren't willing to speak truth, mm-hmm. because they just want their children happy. Mm-hmm. Well, happiness only lasts for maybe 6 months to a couple of years, mm-hmm. Unless there's this bond that mm-hmm. they have together.
Okay. So, Paul, give the guys in our audience maybe an idea of, just from a guy's perspective, you know, whether they're interested in someone and maybe they're concerned about approaching her parents or her dad. I mean, what do they need to know to really be serious about this and to say, you know, because like you said, some mm-hmm. parents maybe won't care and some are going to really grill them. What would be the best way for them to prepare to do this in a very godly manner?
Mm. Great question. I think it's helpful to understand that this dad and mom have cared for this person for 20 years, 25 years, whatever it is, and now they're handing that over to you. And so one is to understand this is not a transaction that has no significance. Mm. And because of that, I think you need to reassure the parents, and I'll speak from a dad's standpoint, I need reassurance that this person is going to take care of my daughter, going to protect her, mm-hmm. going to treat her as a princess, mm-hmm. is going to be able to provide for her, is going to lead her in a servant manner as a Christian leader. So the shortest answer is, how do you prepare to be to ask for somebody's hand in marriage is to become more Christ-like, mm-hmm. if it's a Christian family, and that's what we want more than anything else. Mm-hmm.
What would you say for a relationship that maybe is languishing, or where there's some ambiguity there, or they don't really know what's going on? Maybe the girl is a little bit unsettled, wondering, okay, I'm not sure I totally know where this guy stands. When is it appropriate for the dad to step in, and what should he say?
Well, I think it needs to be a permission of his daughter. Mm-hmm. It's their relationship that he is involved with. But I would really encourage him to develop a relationship with this young man. If they get married, it's going to be one that will go on the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. But to develop a relationship, some young men have never had a father, mm-hmm. and it's the girlfriend's father who becomes as a father to them, and they do start stepping up to the plate. And I think that discussion is very, very helpful. Mm-hmm. But even there, and this is difficult, but you want to make sure that this young man is living that way because of his own convictions, not just hopping through hoops until they're married. Mm-hmm. And so you want to give that relationship time. Mm-hmm. So I would say to the young men, you want them to really seek to be Christ-like.
Okay. And then finally, what would you say, let's talk about, you know, the marriage now has happened. What should young adults expect as far as what should a relationship with their own parents and then with those in-laws look like after marriage? Because some, we know, stay too clingy, and mm-hmm. then that creates friction. Like, you can't let go of your mom. What's happening? Mm-hmm. And then others, it's just like, oh, forget it. I've been released from this family that I didn't like, so thank you for saving me, you know? So what's a healthy balance?
Mm. Well, there's a really clear scriptural word that sets up the paradigm for marriage. It comes out of Genesis, and then it's repeated multiple times in Scripture. But it's, for this reason, a man will leave mother and father, will cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. That word leave, we often interpret as a statement about geography. If you don't live with your parents anymore, check the box, I've left. But actually what it means, with its origins in the Hebrew language, the word leave means to cut, to sever, and abandon. And obviously it's not talking about cutting, severing, and abandoning the relationship with your parents, but it is talking about your primary allegiance, your primary loyalty and allegiance when you enter the covenant by God's design, is that goes to your spouse and not, which doesn't remain with your parents. So that's the really, really important word from God's word in establishing your own entity as a family. Certainly, you continue to cultivate a relationship. If you're in the camp of, oh, I'm so glad I'm married, I'm done with those people, especially if you're a believer, I think you need to begin to see your family of origin as your mission field, as somebody that you want somehow to influence for Christ by the way that you live and love in your marriage and the way you honor them to whatever degree you can. If it's from a Christian family, I'll tell you that the statistics tell us that 3 out of 4 marriages struggle with the extended family relationship, that there are overbearing in-laws who don't let go. There are in-laws who keep ledgers about how much time you've spent with one opposed to the other. There's no place for that according to God's design. But the onus of responsibility actually is on the young couple. For this reason, a man will leave. It doesn't say for this reason, parents will let go. Now, wise Christian parents will let go because that's what God calls them to, and that gives their kids the best chance of establishing a God-honoring home. But unfortunately, there are a whole lot of things that go into that that make many situations less than optimum.
When we were first married, we were going to buy a house, and that was back when the housing market was taking off, and we brought home $600 a month, and our house payment was going to be $350. So the only way we could buy this house was a huge balloon payment 10 years down. And we asked Virginia's dad, and he said, no, this is a bad idea. You should not do this, and you'd be irresponsible to do it. We talked and decided to do it. And that was a huge statement about Virginia. She could have easily said, hey, you're 25, you've never bought a house, my dad's so much wiser than you, I'm not going to go along with it. But she had cut, sever, abandoned. Her loyalty and allegiance was now to me. And with honoring her father, she went to him and said, thank you for your advice. Paul and I have talked, and we're going to go ahead and buy the house. Fortunately for me, it worked out great with the housing market. But it was a statement of her. I was privileged to co-officiate at two of our daughters' weddings. And at one point, I said to them, Carrie and Julie, I said, in about 20 minutes, you're going to be pronounced Mr. and Mrs. Gabriel Garcia and Mr. and Mrs. Derek Johnson. At that time, you have no responsibility to do anything I say. Derek and Gabe are now the men in your life. I love you the same, but I will not be involved in decision-making with you in any way from this point on unless you both come to us for advice. And even there, when they come to us for advice, and this happens, we were just talking with one of our children who are considering buying a house, and they said, you've had more experience, what do you think? At the end, the statement we always try to make is, this is our advice, but if you choose not to follow it, it won't affect our relationship with you at all. But thank you so much for asking us. And I think parents have to genuinely say, I'm honored that you asked me, but, you know, if you don't agree with me, that's okay.
Yeah, that's good. And I think it says so much, I mean, not only to the relationship that you've established, but really the underlying thing that you're saying is, the relationship that you have with the Lord is ultimately going to determine your success in making that transition. Because really, our hope has to be in Him and not in these relationships that we've forged or how good they are or how we can cling on to what we have. So that's great wisdom. So, well, thank you both so much. Again, the books I talked about on the front end were Before You Save the Date, Letters to My Daughters, and there's actually a workbook for that too. So, whoa, people, you can get into that. And then So You Want to Marry My Daughter, and we will make sure we mention those on the blog so you can hop over there and get all the deets on those. So thank you very much, Paul and Virginia Friesen, for just sharing some of this with our audience.
That's Thanks really so excellent. Much, Lisa.
Thank you.
Here I am, everything. Search my heart, set me free. Here I am, listening. Father, speak. Here I am, everything. Search my heart, set me free. Here I am, listening. Father, speak. Open my eyes, capture my heart.
We are opening up this week's inbox with another question for Candace Waters, who's on the phone. Hi, Candace.
Hey, Lisa. Great to be with you by phone.
Always wonderful to be with you, and we certainly love it when we get a unique question to present you with, and this week is no exception. So you're going to be talking
to... the unique questions are still coming after so many years.
I know. You're going to be talking to a guy here. He says,
He says,
I'm a single 27-year-old guy that could potentially start dating a girl that just turned 18. I know that she's legal. Awesome. And then on the front, everything would be okay, but I want another opinion. My friends and family say they wouldn't have any problems with it, but I feel they probably would. What are your thoughts on the matter?
Well, I wasn't sure what I was going to say to this one, so I took a minute to ask Steve about it. I needed some wisdom beyond my own, and it was funny. He reminded me that this past weekend when we were in Washington, D.C., we drove past a restaurant called Legal Seafood, and everyone on the bus was snickering, like, you know, how defensive of a posture is that? It's like, don't worry, the food's legal.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you lead with that in your relationship, it's a little troubling. That really, whether or not someone is legal is not the standard that we as Bible-believing men and women should be holding up as, okay or not okay to date. And so just to give you a little bit of a contrast to help you see why this is, her age is really not the ultimate indicator of whether or not you can date her. If you were to come to me, Lisa, and say, hey, I met a guy and he's 60, we're going to date. Isn't that great? I'd be like, well, maybe it is and maybe it's not. You know, what else do you know about him? So, obviously, if you were going to date a 13-year-old, it would be absolutely beyond the pale wrong. There are boundaries you can't cross. This one really does kind of get close to the line because of how young she is and also that gap, the difference in their ages. But more importantly, because she is of age, to look at our biblical guidelines for a dating relationship The first one being that we date as believers for the purpose of finding a spouse. And so, you know, is she in a position that within a year or so she'd be able to be married? I think that's an important question. Same thing for him. And then, you know, look through the biblical dating series and look through the guys and girls guides to marrying well on Boundless and go through those character traits and those essential qualities that you have to have in order to fulfill the minimum requirement of being a godly husband in the model of Ephesians 5 and being a godly wife in the model of Ephesians 5. I think that he is getting tripped up by her age maybe too much and not focusing enough on the other things that are far more important, his character, her maturity level. You know, do they have a similar calling, a similar commitment to mission, all of these other things. So where the age issue is one of many issues, but it's not the only one. But it sounds like maybe to him it is. And so I, again, this is a little bit tricky because age is not the ultimate qualifier or disqualifier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, obviously, we don't know this guy's, you know, the whole story or the whole picture here, like where he met her and under what circumstances and why, you know, why he thinks she's a good candidate for dating and stuff. So, again, right. I mean, I would say that, you know, he probably should turn a good ear to some counsel on this as well. I mean, I'm interested in that he says, you know, yeah, I'm figuring my family would have a problem with it. I can't tell if it's just because of the age or what.
Right. So. Right. There might be more to it. You know, I think when you start looking at the stories of people's lives, you realize that people get married at so many different ages, and age at the end of the day doesn't end up being the determining factor of whether someone had a good marriage for life or not. You know, Steve's mm-hmm. parents got married at 19 and 20 and had a great marriage, and they're both deceased now, but were faithful to the end. And so mm-hmm. Youth and you know, advanced age are not on their face the disqualifier or the qualifier, but the fact that he is making it such a big deal, again, you know, if he came and started out with, hey, she is so godly, and our pastor has, you know, said maybe we should consider marriage, you know, these other things that really do make up the substance of the relationship, I think that's where he needs to start.
Yeah, good. All right. Well, thank you, Candace, for, again, approaching that and for getting Steve's opinion, too. That's good. That helps round it out. So
yeah,
always appreciate,
yeah, you're welcome.
Appreciate that. So, OK, everyone, that is it for this week's show. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can answer your question in the future. And hopefully you are passing some of these Q&A inbox questions on to your friends as well. If you want to search for an answer, you can certainly do that at our site as well, because it's, you know, the chance that we've answered something that comes close to maybe something you're wrestling with is pretty high. So do check out our site and then write to us if, in fact, there's something that we haven't dealt with. So that is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.
A donor-supported ministry of Focus on the Family.